Morning, everyone. Hello. How are you? You don't have to respond to that. I'm just going to keep talking to make sure that my voice can be heard. Anyway, so I can be heard, so no one's saying take off mute. All right, cool. Wonderful to see Rob, Mark, Manny, some Jersey grown leadership in the New York City Church. It's wonderful. And that's sort of full circle. I get to be in Garden State Church, full time for myself, having been baptized in Manhattan and coming over to the other side. So it's full circle always with God. Wonderful to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I don't know how to start, but just say, again, the title is Facing God with Mental Health. I could tell you first a little bit about myself. So I am a graduate of University of Vermont. So speaking to the campus is such a pleasure right now. I'm a New Englander. I grew up in Maine, believe it or not. So how I came to New Jersey, and now my kids are in public school in New Jersey, and my daughter Rosie is an incoming freshman at Montclair State. So that is awesome. I'm excited about that. Hearing so much of the presence that we have at Montclair State. And what else about myself? So I have been a disciple since '97. Married since 2000, father since 2004, been in banking. That's really the industry, you could say, my trade, et cetera, since 2000, but a crisis counselor since 2019. And actually started living my life to the full since 2013. So I wrote all this down when I was talking to Garden State Church campus midweek back last month. And the reason I told them that I started living life to the full since 2013 is because that was the year I was hospitalized twice. Actually, once in 2013, then in 2014. So I was hospitalized and eventually diagnosed with bipolar. But I was hospitalized. When I say hospitalized, I was hospitalized in New York City in the psych ward in New York City. So I have a lot of experience. Speaking from a vantage point of how mental health disorder can certainly rob you. And but the good news is with God, and what I've learned over time is with God, you can have life to the full, very much. And so that's why I say 2013 is when I started having life to the full, is because yes, I was diagnosed bipolar, but it was really one of the lowest points in my life in 2013. But it became later on, when I look back, one of my greatest comebacks in life. It really was. I had sort of my suspicions in college of, of mental health disorders, a great way I like to frame it as. I suffered some depression back then. I took a year off for that. But it wasn't really as an adult growing up, adult growing up, well, still an adult. It wasn't really until my 2000s and really coming through as a father, Christian disciple. Working on, places like Wall Street, places like Main Street, banking, you name it, that there was a lot of challenges to my life that my character was exposed to me, of course, and to obviously for God to expose it, that I realized some of the stresses of life are just going to be just that, right? Stresses of life. But it became 2013. Yes, it became really one of my greatest comebacks because I realized how much of a bottom I hit at that point. I can tell you quite intimately that at the time in 2013, when I was in the hospital, there was a lot of people. It was a, Stern School was a teaching hospital for NYU. So the hospital I was in, there's a lot of doctors coming in and out of my room. And I don't remember any of them at all. I don't. And the reason I say that is I don't remember looking at any of the doctors in the eyes. So because I could not, I was humiliated. I was almost to a point of just as, as Paul says, to the point of despair. And it just was a time frame for me when I look back that how I got there. It really doesn't matter how I got there. Is that I remember that was a point where I felt the most humiliated of my life. I felt like throwing it away, basically, throwing my whole life away. I don't remember any of the doctors to a point of just hearing them talk with their stethoscopes and their clipboards and their pens and just talking about this patient, blah, 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 blah. But I do remember one nurse, and I shared this with the Garden State Church campus midweek too. is that I do remember one nurse when I was sitting in my hospital bed that I was going through so much pain and emotion. Whatever you want to think of, I can tell you it was crying, it was almost screaming, it was a lot of things. I had to calm down. I got to a point of calming down, but I was still in that fit of anxiety, stress, and a lot of emotion. But what I do remember is the nurse telling me, because I wasn't responding to them in a way that was, normal patient. So, but I do remember her saying, and I really think this is an angel that came into my life at the time. I remember the nurse saying, "You know what, Carlito, I think you want to get help. I know you want to get help. But right now, all you really need is sleep. And that's probably the best thing that you could do for yourself. And if you just take these sleeping pills, you'll rest and you'll be okay. And the doctors will see you the next morning." And when she said that, all I remember was her voice, and a calming voice, but a firm voice, and a firm voice telling me, "You know what? You need to just listen to the doctors. We're here to take care of you. And you do want to get help." And she said that in a way that she knew me. Like I did. I wanted to get help. And that's why I was there. So, and she was right. I took the pills. And I'll tell you, that's the only thing I needed right at that moment was just sleep. And I did. And I slept, and I slept well. And I woke up the next day, and I had to process the events that happened over the past 48 hours. So I tell that to tell you that I do have a lived experience as a someone living with diagnosed bipolar. However, I will say that because in the mental health field, there's a lot of us who are advocates of mental health because they call us lived experience advocates. Because of what we've been through, we so much want to give back. And want to give. The reason I and a lot of what happened to me in my life to what the Bible says, because back then in 2013, I wanted to throw everything away. All right. And I told this to the Garden State midweek service for the campus people there. I said, I wanted to throw everything away. And it really is, to be honest with everyone here on this call, we're a thought away from a thought from away from a thought to just deciding I don't want life anymore. Okay. And I do want to just say that just from my perspective, only speaking for myself, is that I do believe, yes, the way Satan works is he wants to rob and steal us. But now Jesus came to give us life and life to the full. So I do want to encourage everyone and tell everyone that we do have thoughts that sit with us that aren't healthy, but we can get through those thoughts. And we have a greater inspiration and encouragement when also we're disciples. And because we're disciples, there's the victory itself. And it took a lot of hard work for me to connect my spiritual life to what I saw and what I understood of mental health. And it took so long for the fact that 2013 all the way to 2019, that's 6 years, that's when I started giving myself back to community. Meaning I was certified crisis counselor for an organization called Crisis Text Line. And also I started the Men's Mental Health Ministry in New Jersey back in 2019. It took me a long time. It took me 6 years to get to that point, but I knew that there was something that I have to give back because everything I was learning from my time, whether I was in outpatient program, whether I was on the other side of phone call, the phone lines of crisis text line, whatever, I'm on the counseling side, but I was once also on the other side too. Whatever that time period was for me to work through talk therapy, group therapy, I still have the same therapist I have today that I had back in 2013, to go to support groups where I seek out support groups on my own on bipolar. That all that hard work going through that time of, whatever the 6 years were to get to 2019 is because I believe everything comes from the Bible. Everything comes from the Bible. And if there's really two things I want to leave you with today, with everyone on this call, there's two things I do want to say that you're going to get from this, and I hope you will, is 1A, living with mental health disorder is living life to the full. It is. And two, we are all fighting a great battle, and it's not your fault. Gloria Vanderbilt's one of my persons I look up to in mental health, and she once say, "Be kind to everyone you meet, because everyone is fighting a great battle." And it's so true. We don't know the person next to us who, you know, what they're going through. No one knows, right? We don't know what the person is going through yesterday, today, tomorrow. Probably the thing that would harm us the most is obviously Satan's schemes, but is us being alone with our thoughts. Probably the worst case scenario for each one of us here is if we're alone with our negative thoughts too. And I heard once in a workshop or seminar that, you know, if you think about your days and you think about just within an hour, say, of your day, you have hundreds of thoughts that come across your brain every day, right? Within an hour, tens, hundreds, maybe, I don't know. But what we do is we fail to capture the positive thoughts and actually pick them out and dwell on those. And if you think about it, that's what Paul is trying to say. And I think he says in Philippians, right? Just, you know, meditate on what's holy, what's righteous, what, you know, he's trying to give that holy positive thinking in a lot of his writings. So it's so true. And in John 10:10, when Jesus says the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Well, that means also, you know, we want to have life to the full. We know that we want to be happy. Unfortunately, life has circumstances that we can't control. Life has people in our lives that we can't control their decisions, or we can't control their reactions to us. We just can't. There's a lot of things in life we just don't have control over. But we have control over ourselves, and we all have control over our decision making. The problem is, obviously, Satan has a lot to do with the world today, as he's always have. But that's the victory that Jesus came to do, was he came to overcome Satan. And like his walk, we have that walk too as disciples. It is a long struggle towards victory. But it is true that Jesus wants us to have life and to have life to the full. Now, if those are the two things I hope you get out of this, I do want to spend a little bit of time going into managing mental health, being comfortable with mental health, being comfortable with even that term mental health. You know, a lot of people call it mental wellness, mental health. I think it's great just to call it mental health, mental wealth, or mental health, whatever you want to say. But I like to describe sort of mental health is just like physical health. They're all connected. It's mind, body, soul. And in the field of mental health, there's medicine, medication management, there's counseling. There's a lot of terminology. There's CBT, DBT, CBTI. Okay, I'm just throwing these terms out. There's cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, CBTI, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, insomnia. There's life coaching, which is a part of, you know, mental wellness. There's crisis work, the work that I do. There's behavioral technology. You call it behavioral tech science now. There's care managers, healthcare delivery. All of that, I can tell you, as being a patient of managed care, right, and being someone who's a consumer of mental health care, as well as a patient and also now an advocate for being part of mental care delivery, is everything comes from the Bible. Everything. Real quick, Moses was probably the first therapist ever. Okay. So remember what the conversation Moses had with God, you know, back when God was ready to annihilate the Hebrews, basically, you know, there was some anger he had in him, right? He had some moments too, right? And he wanted to start all over, right? But remember Moses, who calmed down God. And he said to him, he said, okay, listen, calm down, slow down here. What will the Egyptians say if you just started over and wiped out the Hebrews, right? So, you know, there had to be some time. Like, I really believe that there's, you know, emotions, whether they're intense, so intense, like God had when he was so angry and upset that he wanted to start all over again with creation. to when we have fits of rage or when we have anxiety, stress, any kind of emotional disorder. And by the way, disorder, just, you know, I like the term disorder because my therapist taught me that really, you know, she said to me, Carly, do you know what disorder is defined as? Is all it means is it's out of order. That's it. That's all it really is. And that helps me be it helps me to be comfortable with my own mental health, because a disorder is just that. Every day we're just trying to reframe things and get it all in order. Just make it match up so that we have a lot more of a calm day or a lot more of an organized day in our thoughts, in our heads. So, you know, back to what I was describing about just mental health and mental health delivery and in the field of mental health, and everything really does come from the Bible, because I was also in patient care. There's outpatient programs where you actually go to, and this was while I was working a 9-to-5 job. I would go at nights to an evening program where it would be 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, something like that. And it was three hours a night. But the first hour and a half, believe it or not, was for a lot of us professionals, young professionals, you name it, 9-to-5 people. We would go in and into a room. There would be a therapist and there'd be a group. And all we do, they call it process. We would sit for about an hour and a half and just process our days, each one of us. Okay. And the evening group I had back then was probably about 5 or 6 people, give or take. There was a good flow of it. And for the time that I did this for about 5 or 6 weeks, but for the time I was going through it, I realized that what they're just doing is everything we do as a life team, a small group, a Bible talk, is we circle, we huddle up, we have discussions, we get open, we talk about our days. What they were doing back then, or what they still do today in outpatient programs, is they help the individual go through and process what it is they just went through during the day. Now, I saw, for me, in my walk, I saw everybody, every cross section of society in my outpatient program is, you know, there was the individual who was addicted to chemicals and drugs. The person who's going through grief and loss, a family member who died. There was me. There was the spouse who she's going through a divorce and it was just laid on her and she couldn't figure out what the heck's going on. So, and then there was, another person. She was there because she was addicted to sex and she had unfortunately she had a bad relationship with her dad, broken relationship growing up. So, that's how she coped. So, and I tell you this to say that it doesn't matter. It didn't matter who you are or how did you get in that room. It's we all were in a circle together and we were there because of, whatever circumstances we were going through. It didn't really matter. It was this emotions were the same that we were trying to process. The emotions of pain, anxiety, stress, depression, you name it. I can go on and on, but the real support that we were able to get was it was in a non-judgmental setting. And it was a very welcoming group. And for all of us, it became a place where not only do we process and just get all of our stuff and junk out there, but we started rooting for each other and we started building each other up. Now, think about that. Okay. So for me, when I was going through that time frame of just, going to patient program 3 nights a week, I realized, my gosh, this is like just like being part of a church. It is a part of just being with a support team. And we got to know each other very well. When you're like-minded, right? Like we are as disciples and Christians, when you're like-minded and we're open with each other, it is amazing how much help you can get. And from the work I do in crisis counseling is there's a lot of, from the conversations that I'll have, and a lot of it's on text, right? So there's a chat box and I'm working off my computer and, people will come in and they'll text. The thing that I notice the most about people who are coming in needing help because of the crisis they're going through is how self-aware they are about themselves and their pain. Now, they don't know it. They don't actually realize it. They're coming to us for help. They're raising their hand. The biggest thing I do right up front is I tell them, you did, not only did you do the right thing, but it takes so much strength to come here and to tell me about all your problems with a stranger and all about your pain, and just to be free about doing that. And they need encouragement, which is similar to, you know, like we all need every day, right? And when I try to help them understand, you know, what it is they're going through, we're not trying to fix them. We're not trying to solve their problems. All we are is we're listening to their pain. We recognize their pain. You know, I was once on the other side, so I definitely can recognize their pain. But all they need to hear, all they'd like to hear, is that someone cares about them. It's something that's very similar in every chat that comes through, and I listen to them. I could tell when they're just vomiting emotions and I have to wait for them just to vomit the emotion. But something that's very similar to each one of them is, one, they want to get help. They just don't know it, which is similar to me when I was a patient in the hospital. I raised my hand. I wasn't sure if I wanted help, but like the nurse told me, it's like, you know, you want the help, you know, you need it. And that's where the strength is in these people, is when they raise their hand, they come in for help, and they tell us, you know, their problems. A lot, it's often where people don't think, you know, if I tell people, often think this is that if they tell people problems, they're just going to burden them. It's far from the truth, because when you're strong enough to admit your weakness, you're vulnerable, your humility, and you know what's, you know, you can identify what the problems are, what the issues are, or you're just vomiting pain and emotion. It's at that point as a person that you just don't know, you're self-aware, but that's probably one of the biggest strengths to have, is just to admit that the pain that you're going through, because then you can get help. And then the people who are listening to you, not only just listening to you is helping, but they can point you in the right direction. And now, how great is that? Is that for us disciples, is just to be able to be open, talk about the pain or the emotion, or just talk about it, what it is we're feeling, and then trusting you, point on. So everyone connected in the field of mental health, to whether it's physical health or spiritual health, or like we said, mental health. Okay. So from the vantage point of like what I'm talking to you about is, of how much it is, you know, when people are going through pain, right, and they have a hard time getting open about it. I want to direct you now to Paul, who wrote a lot, actually, not only just about building churches up, but also recognizing and acknowledging pain that what he went through. And that is an important thing that we need to understand, that pain is okay as long as we get open about it. You know, there's a lot of the writings that Paul has that, if you take notice, and I'm going to put up on the screen just a few verses here. So I'm going to pause 1 second and get my Bible up for you guys. But we're going to read in just a few passages in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 is the first one. I got a lot of green up there. You probably see that. And if you don't, someone tell me. So there's 2 Corinthians chapter 1. It's amazing how much N.T. Wright is an author that I examined his writings on Paul. And it's not really a biography, but N.T. Wright, he actually picked up a lot of the writings of how Paul was distressed emotionally and mentally, you name it, physically, of course. But Paul, let me just stop share for a second and read my notes here. Paul was to a point of just, think about Paul, who had to go through and build churches up, and then he had to leave the churches behind, go build up other churches. You know, this is the classic moment of everything relied, like Christianity relied on Paul, right? So he's the one, the missionary man. So if, first of all, just think about that and how much stress that can cause someone. Okay, so God said, okay, you have the responsibility of spreading Christianity all across Western civilization. Okay, and you can't stop. You got to keep going. You would think at some point he'd probably be stressed out, I'm sure. So when we think of, in terms of these terms, if you guys ever heard of for yourselves, you know, I'm just burned out. Okay, we can have days when we're just burned out. Well, imagine Paul, what he had to go through when he left churches and he builds up other churches. He saw some of the writings from other people, get back to him, and they were being persecuted, flogged. You know, he had to leave leaders behind to, help, build up the churches they left behind. But then he understands that they were going through all their persecution to the point of they were being even crucified upside down. Okay. So Paul didn't have a companion, as from what we could tell, but what we do understand is the pain that Paul must have been going through was not just physical, not just spiritual, as we know, but it had to have been mental too. So there's a few verses I want to share. Let's see. Let me move that over there. Okay, 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 8 and 9. We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death, but this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raised the dead. Okay, so if we could tell right from there, that means sure, it was the point of despair of life itself. I'm sure there's other parts of his writings he talks about, like, gosh, I'd rather be with the Lord right now. But he has the mission to do, right? He still has time on earth. He's got to do the mission. But it's the point that they felt they received the sentence of death. I really feel like for them, once they knew they were Christians, they were disciples, they knew they had to go preach the word out to the entire world. And they knew that the Roman Empire is on their tail, ready to kill them. They knew at that point, they just signed up for, it's almost like a suicide mission for them. It was almost like a mission that they were going to just somehow be martyred for what they were doing. Okay. So there's so many things that Paul had to go through and struggled with that I'm sure that his mental health was very challenging. Let's see, what else do we have? I want to look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4 with you guys, and it's in verses 8 and 9. So let me share that too. Let's see. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 8, 9. We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. So from this writing, if we took away things like the buts, think about what he had to go through his life and what he was, evangelizing the world and what he had to go through every day. We are hard pressed on every side, crushed, perplexed, despair, persecuted, abandoned, struck down, destroyed. We always carry around in our body, the death of Jesus. So there are moments in time, I really believe with Paul, that he couldn't sit down with people and just talk with them through so much therapy sessions about how to overcome the emotional duress. He only had moments of time to just write what he could and send it off to the other churches. But here, I'm sure there's so many emotions that they went through. They were abandoned at some point, destroyed, you name it. But he had to persevere. But in only one sentence, he does say that it is the life of Jesus revealed in their body that kept them going. Okay. So it's not so much that, every day Paul had to wake up and just say, okay, I just got to shrug this off and white knuckle under and just be as tough as nails and go out and do it all over again. There had to have been some time for him to process and go through all the mental duress and the physical duress that he was trying to overcome, as well as the disciples that he was raising up too. Lastly, in 2 Corinthians 7, in verse 5, let's see. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5, for when we came into Macedonia, we had no rest, but we were harassed at every turn, conflicts on the outside, fears within. So again, Paul, just from what I understand from his writing and just being someone who has to minister to a flock, many flocks, and actually evangelize the gospel across the entire Western civilization, of course he had no rest. Of course he was harassed, right? But also him saying fears within. Fears within is also something that we can struggle with. Fears can be, for a lot of people, it can be paralyzing. Fears of just, uncertainty of the future, of tomorrow, fears of, what you're going through in terms of what your classmates, fears for me is when I was in work, of what the boss is going to think about my work. So I'm sure there've been plenty of fears for Paul. But again, the fact that he has to recognize the pain that he's going through, and he doesn't want, as you could tell from some of the writings he was saying here, he doesn't want any of the church disciples to be uninformed of what they're going through. When we share pain and we share our experiences, it's because we want people to pray for us. We want them to help us. Some of that prayerful lifestyle that we have is just the encouragement that we need to fight on for another day. Some of that hopeful mindset that we can get from other disciples, other Christians, is just kind of what we need. We kind of need to have their faith help us get through the day. So for a lot of us who, if we have any kind of health, a duress that's going on with us, just know that you're not alone. You're not alone, because a lot of the times when I'm helping people in the crisis work is they feel like they're alone. And because of that, they feel like it's like the Proverbs scripture says, there's like a lion roaring out there. Like they just can't get out of their bed and they can't face the day, because if they're alone, they don't have anyone to help encourage them, which is why a lot of, again, the Hebrew writers wants to say, encourage one another daily. We do need that. We need people in our lives. And that's why I think with mental health, we can be so distracted with the things that we can't control, and the things that we feel like we're so tied in emotionally to those things that we can't control, then our days become sort of tied to that. And we're defined, our emotions are defined by the things that we can't control. But because we do have each other, and we do have the church and being together, part of what being open is making sure you get the help that you can get. And you could raise a hand, and it takes a lot of strength to do that. Okay, so that's part of what I want to describe where Paul's coming from. And now I wanted to really kind of end up with talking a little bit about how, if you want to think through some of the things I wrote down for you, just to kind of, think about it in your mind, just, when John 10:10 says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. But Jesus, he said, I've come to that they may have life and have it to the full. I kind of want to wrap up with just talking about, again, in our mental health state of mind, that we do have decisions we can make every day. But a lot of those decisions are tied to things that we can't control, or people and other people's reactions to us and things we can't control. But we can control how we want to frame up or think about how we're going to make a good decision in our next moment. Here's what I mean by life to the full. So what's the opposite of life to the full? Well, it's not full. It's hopelessness, it's depression, anxiety, stress, all of the like, right? And who's responsible for that? Is it really you? Like, am I responsible? And do I actually have control over this hopelessness, this depression, this anxiety, this stress? Sometimes it can feel like, I kind of joke around with my my Bible talk a lot, is sometimes it can feel like actually hopelessness, anxiety, stress, they have coffee with you every morning at the breakfast table and they just won't go away. It's like you'll be sipping your coffee and be like, there's hopelessness again. It's just kind of staring at me and it's not going anywhere. I got to apply for another job. I got to go for another interview, but I keep getting no's at all these interviews and my life is just all about hopelessness. But it's not true, right? Because if you frame it up with, is it me who wanted to wake up and have breakfast every morning with hopelessness, right? Is that what I get all excited to do? And so that I can have that hopelessness decide the rest of my day to be hopeless, right? Is it really me? Did I elect for that? You know, all of that's not true, right? We know Satan is the best at lying. So I want you to think about just not letting the robber and the stealer and the thief take these things away from you, right? So here we go. I'm just going to read out this list and then just let it meditate in your mind, or just let these thoughts kind of dwell in your head. As far as don't let people rob you. Don't let things rob you. Don't let others' decisions and their reactions to you rob you. Don't let other people's successes rob you, right? That's tied to jealousy and envy. Don't let a moment define you, okay? I'll come back to that in a second. Don't let the past rob you. Don't let emotions rob you. Don't let what ifs rob you. Don't let mistakes rob you. Don't let victories rob you, meaning don't let them become your idol so that now you're setting yourself up for expectations because you're always going to think I'm successful, successful, successful. Of course, we're fallible. And then there's a failure, right? Don't let your talent rob you. All right. When we go back to things like don't let a moment define you, that really speaks to every one of us, right? We can have a bad day, have a bad day at school, have a bad day in a class, have a bad day at work, have something that we tripped up on, and we let our mind allow us to say that's defining us in the moment, right? So I can only imagine what Will Smith went through, right? In that moment of what he did, it's now defining him, right? It's now defining him. Everything is going back to what he did at the Oscars, right? And then you think before that moment, everything he did to earn that Oscar was really what defined him for himself earning the Oscar. But that moment defined him, right? If you guys remember Ryan Locke, who's a swimmer from the Olympics, right? You know, he I think he won a silver, and then the next day he made some bad decisions and went and like smoked marijuana with some other athletes or something like that and lied about it, right? You know, what moment is his, right? Is it really the silver, or was it the next day, right? You know, he had a quote that said, you know, he's not going to let that define him. Okay, sure. We obviously there's repentance, right? There's change. The one athlete I like to turn to and which brings me inspiration is Lindsay Jacob Ellis. Is that Olympics when she fell, you know, towards the end of her snowboard race when she had everyone beat, and she, you know, she did a highlight reel for herself and fell, and then she didn't end up medaling. You know, we all could look back and say that was her moment, right? And did she let that define herself, right? And the cool story about that is it was four Olympics later, this past Olympics, she kept competing every Olympics, and she ended up double gold this past Olympics, where you know, she allowed herself to work her way back, and she did not decide to let the Olympics back in, I think it was Torino, whatever that was, to define her, right? And it's the same with God, right? God, you know, there's scripture that says, like, you know, he has his anger, his moments last only just a moment, right? But his love lasts forever. And it's the same when that time when, you know, he had that moment with Moses, and he knew, okay, yeah, that's probably a wise thing. I won't, you know, just kind of annihilate the Hebrews and I'll start all over, right? Yeah, his anger lasts just but a moment. We all have moments, but we're not going to let that define us, okay? Because that's who we are as disciples, and we're Christians. And a lot of mental health is just allowing yourself to just frame up for yourselves what it is that you want to do to manage in a healthier way your thoughts. And to do that and to have the advantage of the Bible and people around you who are Christians is such a great advantage over what people have out there who don't have God in their life. So that's it. That's all I wanted to, well, it's always a lot, but it's what I wanted to end up sharing with you tonight. We'll give it back to, I believe, Mark.